Log Talk Radio.
Bless you.
Thank you. We're at a milestone.
Joining in right about now. My family's calling and forgot I was doing a show, but we're all good now. But anyway, let me do something right there.
Yeah, the music's still playing, David. There you go.
No, I got rid of it. It's gone now. So how's everybody doing? Everybody's coming in at the same time.
Wow. Doing wonderful. What? It's sunny in Michigan.
Doing great out here in California.
Yo.
California.
Wow. I have a question that I want to raise out to the panel. There's only one, two, three, four, five, two more people coming in. But right now, I'm going to ask you this question because it wasn't something that was in my face that I think it should be, but it is in my brain and I can't get it out. Are you aware that on August the 10th, Russia intends to be the first in the world to approve a coronavirus vaccine? That's 2 weeks from now. And Russia is claiming they have a vaccine that will cure coronavirus, and they plan to release it on August the 10th. It comes from one of Russia's universities there that they claim is their comparison to our Harvard. But I was not aware of this until today, earlier today. Bruce, are you aware of that?
Yes. When I say yes, I need to qualify that. Russia's been talking about, or our news has been talking about Russia getting very close and might announce something for the last couple of weeks on and off. So yes, I knew about your statement. I didn't know that it was the date of August the 10th, and who knows if they really have something or whether they've stolen something or they're working with China. Who knows? But, it's been in the discussion stage for a couple of weeks now.
You know, but there's several because China is trying to give, like we discussed last week, $1 billion to the Caribbean and Mexico or South America to buying their vaccine. Everybody's coming up with vaccines, it seems. What are we doing?
Trump's answer was, he said, good. The merrier, but the more people that might have legitimate cures, fine. And I agree with that if they're legitimate and they work.
All right. Michael, what are your thoughts? Well, every week. Every week.
Michael.
Let me do this.
Michael.
I know he's there. All right, so yeah. Ron, Ron, did you know that this was coming up and that close?
I've heard rumblings about it, but I haven't heard too much detail. All I can say is, you know, I agree with Bruce that, you know, if it is legitimate and if it is a vaccine that works, that's great. I personally would be hesitant and skeptical, and I would definitely not expose myself and check myself with it until approved by the U.S. government for sure.
Correct.
So, yeah, David, this is Michael. I do agree that we're, China and Russia, I think, are just ahead of us right now in everything, especially with this coronavirus. And I think it all boils down to our leadership at the top. I think Donald Trump's just doing such a horrible job that everybody's beating us at everything right now. And it's just sad. It's just a sad day in America, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just it seems everybody's jumping on and everybody's had vaccines. Are we not doing anything? I mean, I haven't heard. You would think that we would know that we are getting close or something, but I'm not sure. Darius, what do you think? Where do you think the president is on the United States? Where are we? Are we even in this picture right now?
I don't know if you guys have been watching the news, but Russia made that announcement after Trump did his news conference on Wednesday. It was either Tuesday or Wednesday, announcing that they are working in very close partnership with Pfizer, and that they will be having something as soon as within the next 30 days. And that's when Russia came out and said, "Oh, well, we'll have something next month." But China has been saying they've had, you know, they've been closed since the thing spread. And you've got Germany also, who the U.S. is working closely with too. So there are several countries that are close. But once again, here we go with this same talking point that Trump isn't doing anything, that America is last. And if you guys just watch the news and watch the news conference, you'll hear what he's doing. He just announced. And then for Michael to give China credit, China created the whole thing. They started all of this. So they don't get any credit from me. I don't care if they do come up with a vaccine tomorrow. You're the cause of this whole thing spreading throughout the world. So China gets zero kudos. I don't see how you guys can fix your mouth to credit China with anything.
One of the things about China, though, they're saying that was made up from the president of the United States, made that up about them, but they really blame it on the United States because they were saying that, and we talked about this, that the university in the United States was taking samples to China. That's where they were coming from. So China, we said it was China. China said it was us. So I don't know, you know, I step back on that argument because nobody really knows exactly. But, I hope somebody comes up with a vaccine. I really don't care, but I just don't think. Darius, in your thing, so the United States is saying they're working with Pfizer. Pfizer, who happens to be in Michigan. Bruce, are you aware of that?
Yes. They're working, as Darius said, they're not just working. They've got, I may have the number wrong, but let's say three or four very viable possibilities going right now. And they kind of like a horse, well, maybe not horse race, but in various moments, one might appear to be a little farther ahead than the other. But yes, the one that's popping up right now is the closest is Pfizer. Yep.
Wow. Pfizer is.
Don't forget there's also Moderna out of Boston,
yep.
I think it is, that's pretty close as well. And there's Cambridge in England. So there's, you know, there's hope out there.
Well, and that's good. If for some reason we actually help each other even a little bit to get to the one or two of whatever the number is that really works, nothing wrong with that at all. That's a good mending of politics. I mean, if it comes out as a joint solution, it doesn't have to be it's not a space race. It's a race, but not a space race.
I was just going to ask, you said it's not a space race, but I was going to ask the panelists, what do you think, let's say for a minute that Russia, working with China, or Russia alone, or China alone comes up with a vaccine, how do you think the U.S. would react to that? Do you think it would become available to Americans? Do you think Congress and or the president would get in the way of that? What are your thoughts on that?
Who are you asking, Ron?
Bruce.
Oh, I think, Ron, I think, let's say that really happened and it was a real solution. It would be scrutinized to death, as one of us said, and it should be, to make sure it is. He may or may not play politics with it because, one, there'd be a good side of embracing that if they could prove it was right. And, of course, the Chinese might see it as a savior of everybody, or a lot of people think it's their fault they started it, that, they've also come up with a cure. So if somehow it got out that this is a real cure, it would be very tough for the United States to keep it at arm's length if they, by approval, by our health department and approval, said that it was real. So I think it would come, but it would come after a lot of scrutiny.
All right. I wanted to talk about something, although coronavirus, one of the things that is up right now and people are very concerned about is the school opening piece. In the school opening piece, something came up recently that I thought was concerning that we had not really discussed, is that people who don't have a lot of money, because if the schools don't open and they go from home using home internet, a lot of the numbers came out that 8.6 million children in school in the K to 12 age, parents do not have internet or computers. So do you think that instead of stimulus checks, let's go to the United States for those 8.6 million people should be helping them, because their parents were concerned that their kids, if they don't have internet, they don't have computers, they can't afford them because they don't have jobs now, that they will get behind and the world will end up with a whole, 8.5 million kids who cannot keep up in school or lose. What are your thoughts on that one, Darius?
I'm sorry, David. I really couldn't hear the question. You kind of faded out on me a little bit. Can you mind repeating that?
Oh, my question is the parents who, there are 8.6 million families in the United States with kids who are between kindergarten to 12th grade who cannot do home schooling from internet because the kids don't have either Wi-Fi, they don't have computers or something like that. My question is, so, and it's felt that most of these are in poor cities, or poor, not all, but some. How, and the parents for these children are all complaining, their kids are going to fall far behind. So my question is, shouldn't the United States, do you think the United States jump in and help these people? I mean, we're doing stimulus checks. Shouldn't there be something to help these 8.6 million children?
Yeah, I have a very simple answer to that, and that's send them back to school. There's not. I read somewhere the other day, there's not one case in the world, not just in the U.S., in the world, where a child has transmitted the virus to an adult. School-aged children, like I said before, it's less than 100 cases in the entire country of school-aged kids, and most of those kids have some sort of pre-existing condition. There's no reason at all for us not to open the schools back up. There's no scientific statistical evidence that says we'll be safer if kids stay home. So that's my answer. Just open the schools back up and avoid all of that.
So why do you think there's hesitation to open the schools back up then?
The hesitation is we have to keep this idea of fear going on in the country right now, and we have to keep ramping up that fear until election time. I mean, I know it sounds maybe a little bit conspiracy theorist or whatever, conspiratorial theories, but I just honestly believe that people want to destroy this country and the economy so that Joe Biden will get elected, and they're willing to sacrifice our kids and everybody else in an effort to do that.
And to that point, this is Michael. To that point, To that point, I would say, and Donald Trump and the Republicans are willing to risk everything, including our kids' life, just to try to get the schools back open so he can say he's doing something.
Michael, there's no scientific evidence that shows that that would happen. There's nothing that has happened thus far that shows that if they let kids go back to school, that that's what's going
to
happen. That's all I'm saying. They're always
and to that, I say 150,000 dead Americans right now of coronavirus.
Kids, I'm talking about kids. So let's say if you say you want to look at the science, look at the statistics, look at who are the most vulnerable, then there is no
father. I'm a father. I'm not going to play Russian roulette with my kids. I'm not going to gamble. If I see 150,000 people died of something, I'm not going to say, well, maybe my kids won't die and throw them out there. I'm not going to do that.
Okay, so Michael, I'm a father too, and let me say this. There's nothing that your child is more likely to die in a backyard accident than he is from coronavirus. Also,
I'm not taking a risk with my kids. I'm just not. If you want to take a risk with yours,
I'm not taking
a risk with my kids when I see a firing squad.
I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just simply stating the facts. There's no factual evidence to prove that that will happen. Not only that, I have kids. I have great nieces and nephews and grands that are in daycare. They've been in daycare since this has happened. Not one kid has been infected. Not one kid has brought anything home.
Okay. Do you agree that this is a deadly disease? Do you agree with that?
150,000 people dead? Absolutely.
Okay. End of conversation when we're talking about kids.
That's not the end of conversation because there aren't any kids out of that 150,000. Not any school-age kids, Michael.
Okay. Well, we disagree on that. I just don't think the kids should
That's not a disagreement. That's a fact. There is no evidence of school-age kids dying from that disease or passing it on to adults.
Well, let's
no
keep
evidence.
It that way. Let's not take a risk. Let's keep it that way. Let's not risk it and shoot them back out there and see if something happens or something don't happen. Let's not take that risk with our kids.
But Darius, I remember reading or hearing just like almost a week ago that kids that are 10 years or older, I think it was 10, that they can spread the disease even if they're asymptomatic, just like adults. Don't you guys remember hearing that?
Yes,
I didn't hear it, but I didn't hear it, but what I'm saying is even if they say they're capable of doing it, I'm saying there's no evidence that it's happening or has happened. Not one kid in an entire world. That's what there's not one.
Well,
case.
Nobody can prove that a kid has transmitted it to an adult. Nobody can prove that an adult has transmitted it to another adult. Nobody can prove who gave you the coronavirus. It's impossible.
Yeah,
no,
maybe a kid doesn't die from it, but what if the kid brings
true.
It home and gives
that's
it to grandma and grandma died?
That's not true. They have contact tracing. There is
no,
is
they don't.
Proof.
Contact tracing
that's how
is
they
not
find
working
out.
In this country. No, there's no contact tracing at all in the U.S.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Just look at the rate of kids. Research this yourself. Look at how many school-age kids have died from the coronavirus without pre-existing conditions worldwide.
No, we're in agreement that the kids don't die, but they could be the ones transmitting it to the adults. There's been camps down here in South Florida where there's kids that have contracted the virus, and who knows how many adults they gave it to. But nobody will ever know for a fact that it was the kid that gave it to the adult. That's all I'm trying to say.
I got you, and I agree with you on that. But there are daycare centers that have not closed, and you don't see cases of kids going to daycare, bringing that home to their parents. That's all I'm saying. You don't see cases of that happening. So what would be the difference in the school?
Hey, Darius, I got one question. What if you're wrong?
What do you mean, what if I'm wrong? Then there will be some
people that die. If you're wrong,
a
kid will die. If you're wrong.
Right. But if I'm, even
gonna,
if I'm,
I'm
right,
not going to take the risk.
Kids, even if I'm
should
right,
we,
kids, well,
should
that's
we?
Fine. And you should have, and you should have that option, Michael, as a father. I would never try to take that from you, and I would never try to force kids to school. I'm just saying that schools should be open because there isn't enough evidence to support to keep them shut down.
Okay, but we agree. No, if you're wrong, a kid will die.
People are going to die anyway. The government can't guarantee people not getting sick. The government can't guarantee that people won't die. That's not the function of the government.
Okay, cool. But in this particular scenario, we agree that if you're wrong, a kid will die.
I agree, yeah.
Okay,
Michael,
cool.
Michael, can I, let me ask you a question from a different, this is Bruce, from a different angle. We all know that the common flu or the flu kills many more children and adults and everything in between than this COVID-19 has thus far. We don't know where it's going to end. We don't know
what
it's going to morph into.
No, the flu kills 30 to 50,000 people a year. Coronavirus has killed 160,000, and it hasn't even been half a year.
And how many years, though, Ron, have we had the flu? We still don't have a vaccine for the flu. Not a vaccine.
That is true.
So my other question would be, Michael, I feel it, too. I'm also a parent. And I've got grandkids now too, a double dip. And I mean this sincerely. At what point would you feel comfortable sending your kids back to school?
When there's a vaccine.
Well, and let me throw this at you. Okay, that's valid, but that's not a magic bullet either, because the vaccine doesn't necessarily mean they couldn't get it again or be exposed to it, just like other diseases we've had. So a vaccine, as good as it may be, isn't a cure forever either. So at some point we have to address how do we go back and open schools in a smart, smart way that kids minimize the risk. At some point we have to do that. And keeping kids out of school for another year or more possibly, I don't see that as being the right choice either. And I like you, I have kids that I'm concerned about too.
Gentlemen, I want to read for you an article in that I got off CNN. And it was because of summer camp, they went out and tested 600 kids up to teenage age. And it says, interestingly, a higher percentage of the young children tested positive, 51% among those aged 6 to 10 years old, 44% among those ages 11 to 17, and 33% among those aged 18 to 21. Don, I think you're hitting pretty high. This investigation adds to the body of evidence demonstrating that children of all ages are susceptible to COVID-19 infection and, contrary to early reports, might play an important role in. So there is some proof out there that kids can actually carry the virus and infect each other as well as adults. And that's on CNN today. You could actually go and pull that off the CNN webpage today, which the numbers are pretty high. I mean, and all this was done in Georgia, 597 from Georgia, and of the 597 kids, 260 or 76% were positive for COVID-19. Wow.
Let me remind the panelists, we're not the only country dealing with this. Every country around the world is struggling with what to do with schools. So, you know, it's not just a problem here in the U.S. and it's not a political thing, although we've turned it into a political thing, but it's people are afraid to send their kids to schools.
Hey, David, you really, really, really want to see people upset? Send those kids back to school. Let them mandate that. And watch all the parents and the teachers who are against that idea start taking a knee. I guarantee you want to see a protest. Watch those parents and those teachers protest. And then you're going to topple that protest on top of the protests that are already going on out there in the streets. I think we're headed for disaster with mandating sending those kids back to school.
All right. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time. We've been talking about the coronavirus every week, and actually it's something we need to talk about because parents who are listening to us are wondering what our thoughts are on that subject, but there's so much going on right now. One of the things that came up recently that I thought was very strange that it seems that there are a bunch of politicians right now putting together they're preparing for the chance that the president refuses to concede the election, which they think is something that might happen. And I would think that's very for him not to concede the election if he loses. And there are a lot of people out there who think that might happen. So it looks like a joint team of Republicans and Democrats are working together to figure out what to do if that happens. Wow. Don, you're online. What? You think that's something?
Yeah, David. Yeah, David, that is a topic that they're dealing with right now. In November, he could conceivably lose the election, and then from November to December to January, I think the 20th or something like that, when we inaugurate the new president, he could cause a lot of havoc. He could cause a lot of havoc. I mean, he's already caused havoc for 3.5 years. He could cause a lot of havoc. So that's a major topic. And they're meeting on that now because he's not a gracious loser. Every person that has ever lost the presidency of the United States of America has bowed out gracefully. This man is not going to bow out gracefully. I'm going to tell you that right now.
And David, I've been following that story very closely, very closely. Let's not take lightly the people that are having this discussion. These are Republicans and Democrats in a room having this discussion, and these are very established elite Republicans. These are former federal judges. These are former – it's a former someone from the George Bush administration is in the room having this conversation. Colin Powell's in the room having this conversation. These are very powerful Republican men who are distinguished and elite who are saying this guy might not leave if he loses. That's very serious. You got to really, really look at that because last week we talked about him wanting to be a dictator. So now you got everybody thinking this guy wants to be a dictator. That's a very serious conversation, and I think they need to cover that topic more because we're on the verge of dictatorship in America.
Give me a break, guys. So,
you guys
so
are
how
trying
does
to tell
he,
me that.
How does, yeah, how does
Wait
he
minute,
stay
sorry.
In office? Jeez.
I'm sorry. We got a case of amnesia here. You guys are trying to tell me that Al Gore bowed out gracefully? You're trying to tell me that Hillary Clinton bowed out gracefully? She's still going around now today saying the election was stolen from her. Al Gore took it all the way to the Supreme Court. What are you guys talking
about?
You
didn't have a bunch of elite statements both sides of the aisle meeting up discussing what we're going to do here. You didn't have that back then. This is the first time you've had that. Do you hear what I'm saying here? You've got people who are very powerful like Colin Powell sitting in a room with other powerful Republicans going, hey, what are we going to do if this guy doesn't leave?
No, let's look at
it. Never
this
happened
way,
in this country ever.
Wait a minute, gentlemen. You can't use those other names that you brought up as examples. We're talking about a person that is currently in the House.
Yeah,
I was going
to
say
that.
Thank you, Don. Yep.
The person is in the House. Don't go crazy. Those other two individuals were not in the House. When you're in the House, how do you get someone that lost the seat in the House out of the House with
when
the seat?
Somebody quote me the time that Donald Trump tweeted or said that if he doesn't win, he may not leave. Please tell me.
He already said it. He said it.
No, he never said it. He's never said it. That's what the talking heads are saying. Point to me, please reference it, and let me know when Donald Trump said that.
He says, it was rigged if I lose.
No,
he's
that's
it
not
up.
What he said.
He's setting
that's
it up
not
for
what
you to tell you.
That's not – he said the same thing he said when he ran against Hillary. They asked him, would you accept the results? And he said, it depends. He said the same thing last time when he ran. He's going to say the same thing now. It depends. It's already clear that the Democrats are plotting – to try and steal this election with the mail-in.
So what you're
vote.
Saying, it depends on whether I win or lose. That's what you're
no,
saying.
He didn't,
His
no,
answer is,
no,
it depends
said,
on whether I win or lose.
That's not what he was answering. He was saying, would you clearly accept the results? He didn't say, oh, they would have to come and get me out. He's saying, no, I may not accept it. If it's not done fairly, I may not accept the results. That's all
and
he was saying.
If I lose, it's not
and
done
said,
fairly.
And he's saying
why
the
not,
same thing
why,
he said the last time.
Why not say... the answer like this. If the people of the United States have voted that I leave office, that's what I will do. Why not answer it like that? Why
if
cause
fair,
doubt? Why
if
cause doubt? Well, he's already planted the doubt seed, if it's fair. He's already planted the doubt seed.
Donald, that isn't even right. You win or lose by the Electoral College, not the popular vote.
Well, Electoral College, you know what I mean. We don't have the popular vote in this country.
I can't believe you guys think he's going to barricade himself in the White House and not come out.
It's not just us thinking like that. That's the point I'm getting at. It's not just us.
You're right about that.
Thinking that.
Most Democrats.
And not only that. Okay, here's a situation where we're looking for the results to come in, and they're not going to be complete election night anyway. It's going to be a week or so after.
Probably.
The election.
You're right.
Okay.
You're right.
So now here's a person with all the goods. All the goods. I mean, he knows the codes. He could cause a lot of havoc. I'm telling you, this man
and
is
so
not stable.
So could mail-in voting. Not absentee. Absentee is fine. But mail-in voting that is being pushed by various certain people, that could be just as corrupt. And we don't know where it would end up, left or right. But if it's corrupt, if it increases greatly the chance for corruption in the vote, it shouldn't be. Why should we be sending out ballots to people that either don't exist, don't request it, don't this, don't that? They should be sent to people that want to vote absentee. And it goes through a process to prove that they are who they are. That's fair. That's right. Not mail-in blanketed voting all over the place. That has corruption written all over it. Who knows where it's going to end, right or left. It doesn't matter. It should not be a corrupted vote, and we should protect that as best we can.
Bruce, I agree with you 1,000%. We should protect the right to vote in this country. 1,000% I agree with you. And that also includes stop oppressing minority people by closing their polling places early and limiting their option to vote. How about we put that in there too with this whole we're going to make the fair election for everyone.
Michael, wherever that happens, and it is done to suppress anybody's vote, as you said in the minority, that's absolutely wrong, and I agree with you 100%. But
well, start down here in Florida, where we have the supervisor of election of Broward County. He replaced a client that I represented. Her name was Brenda Snipes. He's already closed polling places that are in the minority community and said we don't need that polling place. So it's going to happen all over the country. I mean, come on.
Well, and Don,
the president of the United States doesn't close polling.
No,
That's the secretary of that state. And these precincts that you guys are saying are oppressed minorities. Guess who's in charge of those precincts? Minorities.
Who?
Those are Democratic precincts. So what are you guys doing?
But Darius,
really
you
got
to admit, you got to at least admit that the Republicans don't want that many people to vote. They don't really want, because they know if everybody votes, they lose. You got to admit, they don't want everyone to vote. They're trying to suppress the vote. You got to at least admit that, right?
And the supervisor of election has the jurisdiction to assign polling places. Come on.
No, that
what
is true,
saying?
Though. You have no, the precinct captains set up the polling precincts. They run and manage their precincts. So those are Democratic minorities. So this whole myth about white people don't come in from the suburbs to try to stop black people from voting. What are you guys are drinking the Kool-Aid. It's not true. It's a myth. It's happening in black precincts with black precinct captains, guys.
If I close the polling place, where are you going to vote, brother?
Who's closing it, Don? Who's closing the polling place?
The supervisor of election can jurisdict which polling places will stay open and which ones will close. If I close a polling place down the street from where you live, that affects the vote.
And what I'm saying
John,
is those
John,
are the
that can go either way. It can go right or left. It's not right
but that's
either
not right.
direction.
But Bruce, at least you do agree that the Republicans are trying to suppress the vote in the minority communities. You agree with that one, right?
No, I agree with both sides are probably to some degree responsible for trying to suppress the vote or close things early. You know as well as I do, if the current administration somehow said, I want these districts, I want those polls to close early. Holy Christ, that would be all over the news for months on end, and that would be the end of his presidency. So as Darius said earlier, as Darius said earlier, it's called locally. It's not called nationally, and there are hours posted. If someone locally decides to shut a polling place down, then technically, to help what you said, Michael, they should find a way to help those people. If they know they can't get to another poll that's 10 miles away, help them by shuttle service or, you know, bus or something to get to the other one. I agree with you. It should not be oppressed anywhere for any party. Absolutely.
Well, Bruce, in the 1960s, when they made black people count jelly beans to vote, back then, they would say what you just said. They would say, you know what? Well, they should just find another way. They should just find another way. How about it stop being hurdles there for us to vote? How about that?
I couldn't hear what you said, Michael. They should what in every way?
They should stop putting hurdles up for us to vote. How about there be no hurdles? Why do you always got to throw a hurdle out for us to vote?
That would be my question to you. In a democratic place, which most a lot of the minority areas of urban areas are democratically Democrat Party run, I agree with what was said earlier, then why aren't you going to those people that you support in the Democrat Party and say, why are you doing this? It's hurting our vote.
Look at the people.
You know, that's what you should be asking.
Exactly.
Because I can send you, I can send you a list of Republicans who have power, Secretary of State or whatever their title is, but have power over voting, and they're all Republicans who are trying to suppress the vote.
That's
I can't
Michael,
point
that,
to
Michael,
one
that's,
Democrat.
Michael, that's the truth. Every precinct is run by the local precinct captains. They don't control it from the right, and those are. Democratic cities are run by Democrats.
I understand your point, and I understand how government works very well. Okay, it may be run by Democrats, but that there's one person in charge of the voting in every city, every county.
That's not
there's
one
individual person. It could be a Republican in charge, although everyone else around him is a Democrat. That
Michael,
one
guy
could
be the other
way.
It could be the other way.
To be a Republican.
Could be the reverse,
that's
too.
Not true. Yeah, but there is not one person. There's one person that oversees it. That's the Secretary of State. Each precinct is controlled locally. Local, those people accountable.
I'm going to bring this one to a close. And I'm
David's had enough. David, you've had enough, Justice.
Hey David, we need to bring the supervisor of elections on the call. That's what we need to do, David. We need to bring the supervisor of elections on the call.
John, that seems to be something that you know. That's one of your people. So I'll put that on to you to have here for next week. You can get the supervisor of elections.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to have her on the call or him on the call next week. How about
all
that?
Right. That works.
That'd be great.
I got something that bothered me a lot. Can I throw it out to my brethren on the panel?
Does it have to do with something other than this conversation?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. You didn't think I'd be stupid enough to go back into this one, did you? I'm really upset. I hope some of my guys that lean to the left feel the same way. I'm really upset. I watched a lot of, not all, but I watched a lot of the hearing with Attorney General Barr. And not only did they hardly ever let him answer, they posture so well together like marching in line. Democrats are very good at sticking together. Boy, and there was another illustration. but they would lay some, cast out the line, lay something, and then he'd go to answer, and they'd cut him off. And then they'd say he's rude. He just, they never got him, gave him a chance to breathe. Now, tell me how you felt that hearing went. Any of
it? Can I answer it first,
yeah,
to you, Bruce?
What's that?
Barr was very good at filibustering. Barr was very good
at filibustering. He didn't even get to get two words in. How do you filibuster without talking?
All right, he couldn't even answer.
He could answer.
Are you kidding
he
me?
He could answer. Yes, he could. He
really?
Could answer, but the thing,
really? What was the phrase that
like,
you used, Don?
Like,
I recall, or my time, or something like every time he opened his mouth.
Yeah, like what's happening to me right now.
Yeah, it is. How do you like it? It's not very nice.
Well, the thing is, I'm not going to filibuster. I told you he was filibuster. He was.
Okay.
And the thing, he would never answer yes or no. He would have never answered yes or no. And listen, you know and I know that he's a puppet for Donald Trump. You know.
No, I don't
know
that. No, Don. Don't. You can say
you
that
have,
and feel it. Don't make me feel that way because I don't.
Do you think he represents the United States people?
Absolutely.
All right,
you think
Joe.
Don?
Okay,
Bruce, I'm
glad
you said that.
Did you pick yourself
off the floor? I'm sorry. Yes,
Bruce, I'm glad you said that because you and I and everyone on this panel, we agreed that there's a couple weeks ago, we agreed that there's a problem with the policing in the minority community and it needs to be fixed. He doesn't agree with that. Barr said there's no problem, there's no systemic racism in the community, in the policing system. So he disagrees with everyone on this phone in regards to policing in minority communities.
Yeah, that's not true.
Yeah,
they asked
him,
does he believe in this? They
okay,
asked him, does
okay,
he
let
believe
me, let me
in systemic racism? Did he, ask,
right.
did he answer that?
He did.
They asked him, does he believe in systemic racism? He said no.
Okay.
He said no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't. I believe that. I don't believe in systemic racism, so that doesn't mean that he doesn't that he doesn't care.
Oh, wow.
I'm done.
So,
I'm done.
No,
I'm done.
I'm done. I can't. I'm done. I'm totally done.
Don't hang up. Don't hang up, Michael.
I'm done.
Don't
hey,
hang up.
Everyone in America agrees. When you got the MLB and you got the hockey players taking a knee now, come on now. Everyone agrees that there's systemic racism. And for
yeah,
you to say you
that.
Don't agree, like, you, come on, Bruce. I expect more of you. Really do.
That was Darius.
Overused
that's
and
Darius.
Overabused.
That was Darius
problems.
That said that.
Yeah,
there
that's
are,
Darius that
are,
said it.
Yeah, and there are racist, racial problems still in this country. I don't know if we'll ever be purely without it. I'd love it if we were, but you and I think all of us agree it'll never happen. But this idea that it's systemic, what is it, systemic with the Democratic side, the Republican side, and everybody that breathes?
Okay,
right,
and also, and Darius, and to you, I'm just going to quote Harriet Tubman again. She freed 1,000 slaves. She could have freed 1,000 more had she only known they were slaves.
Get out of this. There's so much more. One of the things, and we're spending a lot of time on politics, and there's so much more to talk about right now. But the one thing that I want to finish the last political statement is because I want to hear how the panel thinks about this. But of course, the court, the Boston Marathon bomber, the court said that they didn't want the death penalty for him. They said, no, that won't. But the White House came out and said that the government must, again, keep the death penalty for the Boston Marathon bomber. So my question is, in your opinion, does the President of the United States, should he come out against a court, you know, a court that has done something? And it just seems crazy to me that if we're going to follow the law like it is, and the court said we're not going to give Boston Marathon the death penalty, why would the White House come out and say, well, y'all need to do that again then? That's kind of crazy to me. Spencer, you have not said anything this whole evening. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, who, David? Who were you asking?
I'm Spencer. The sports guy.
The sports guy.
Spencer. He's not talking, but he's there. Like, I don't know who's on, right? Okay, so Don is there. Spencer, are we not going to say nothing? You want to talk sports? Is that what you want to do? Anyway, this could be Spencer. I'm here. I was talking. Well, then you're on the line, so obviously your phone is you muted yourself somehow. I don't know how you did that. But he sent me a text saying he is talking. Yeah, right. Why don't you take that, Bruce? I'm not muted.
I would love to, but you were kind of muffled, and I didn't even hear the whole question. Can you rephrase it real quick?
My question is, the court, the United States court, has said that the Marathon bomber, the Boston Marathon bomber,
right.
They went in and said he appealed his death sentence, and the court agreed, and so he stays in jail forever, but they're not going to put him to death. But the White House came out and said, well, they need to do it over again, and he should be killed. And my question is, why did the White House come out and negate something that the court has done?
Well, one thing, you're probably not going to like my answer, but I could answer it with another question of why are the courts not accepting a ruling with Flynn and trying to undo something that was already agreed to by the Congress? I mean, it's my point of bringing that up is it seems like the separate parts of the government seem to want to play with each other, and either direction is wrong. If there is a certain authority and decision-making on a certain level, that should be it. And we don't – lately we seem to not be able to – if I don't like the answer, I don't accept it, I'm going to get involved. And that really shouldn't be the case.
All right.
Or how about he's just doing what dictators do?
What was that?
I said, or how about Donald Trump doing what most dictators do?
Well, I kind of knew you were going to go that way. That's why I didn't tell on you. I kind of knew you were going to go back to that part. We've already killed someone. Ron has come back in again. So let me ask this question. Let me go to Juan. Juan, what is it on your mind that you would like the panel to talk about?
You got me, David. No, I was actually going to bring up, I mean, it's about coronavirus, and we've talked about it so much now, but today I heard that now Dr. Birx is suggesting suggesting is a good word, that people wear a shield on top of the face mask for additional protection. So, you know, I mean, I have shields. I've had them for months, but I just don't see the general populace of America walking around with face masks and face shields. So what are your thoughts on that, Don? Don, are you with us?
Don...
Yes, I am. I'm with you. I saw that on television where the students overseas are wearing the shields over the mask. And
right.
I thought it was quite effective for them. But the thing is, we're not even equipped to even give them masks or sanitation. I mean, we haven't provided the equipment it takes to have the schools open again.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want to sound negative, but I mean, I would personally use it, but I don't see most people in this country using it. I mean, we're fighting tooth and nail to get people to use masks in a lot of cases. So I just thought that was interesting to hear her say that.
You're absolutely right. I thought that was interesting too.
All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say to agree with Ron is till we get our almost all of our public to really take it serious and wear masks when they're outside, other than their own home or with their own family, you haven't got a prayer to get them to wear both. We're still in the stage of trying to get people to wear the masks. We've got up here, we've got a lot of people in certain categories that just say, I don't need it. But they're jeopardizing all of us, as you know.
Yeah, and the reason I left for a few minutes, I wanted to watch a story on ABC, and you could call it fake news or whatever you want to call it, but it was a couple who had been married, I think, for over 50, 60 years, something like that, and the wife was in the hospital dying of coronavirus, and the husband put on all his PPE and went in there to say his final goodbyes, and he ended up, I mean, this is to show you how contagious this is, he ended up getting it, even with all the protection he had, and he ended up dying just, I think, today or yesterday, after a couple of weeks after visiting his dying wife of over 50 years. So, you know, this is not anything to play with. I mean, I personally know lots of people already that have been impacted by COVID-19.
Well, and also, Ron, we don't know with all that gear on that he contracted it from his dying wife. He might have contracted it from someone else wherever he went to see her.
That's true, but my assumption would be that if he was so careful, I mean, you're right, Bruce. I mean, I'm just assuming now, but, you know, I would think that if he was careful enough to do all that to go see her, that he would be careful anywhere he goes. But, you know, they could have extended family, and he could have gotten it from somebody else.
But I agree with you. He probably tended to be very careful, but you can get it anywhere, it seems, in any way. Because
And the
so
scary
many
part is that you can
are,
get it from – You know, I keep hearing people say, oh, he, you know, even my friends, you know, they call me and they say, let's go have lunch. And I'm like, no, I can't. And they said, I'm not sick. And I said, how do you know? Have you been tested?
Yeah,
you know, just because
right.
you don't have symptoms doesn't mean you're not sick.
And even if you're well that moment in time, 2 days later, you could be a carrier. You just don't know.
That's true. You could be tested today and be negative and then get it tomorrow.
Yep.
All right.
I got a question.
Yes?
Yeah, I got a question. We're experiencing the biggest health crisis this country has ever faced right now. And this health crisis has revealed a lot of health disparities among people of color, and also economically, we're in trouble because it's going to take us a year or two to dig our way out of this economical crisis that we're experiencing with families that can't feed their families in lines for food, and businesses, small businesses that are closed, especially minority businesses. It's unbelievable. And then, not only that, the George Floyd racial discrimination is so apparent in this country like I've never seen it. I saw the 60s, 50s, and 60s and what we dealt with along with the Vietnam War. But this crisis has made it more difficult than the Vietnam War because it's on our own ground, and the country is experiencing more effects of COVID-19 than any country in the world. How do we repair? How do we repair the love and the leadership that this country had before our current administration?
That's an easy answer, Don.
Yep. What's the answer then?
What's the answer, Bruce?
Answer is both. Both real Democrat and Republican parties get off their you-know-what and really work with each other and get things done. And it would be solved rather quickly, because we'd have leadership that no matter which party their followers turn to, they'd get the same message. I know that's not going to happen, but that's how simple it could be if we could get them to do that.
How do you do that?
Yeah, I just said that. I don't ask God. I don't know if I may say that. That's what it would probably take.
All right, gentlemen, we have less than 5 minutes to go, and I want to offer a subject out. Let me ask Darius. Darius, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk to the panel about, or what thoughts you might have?
I guess what I was really thinking about this week, especially with everything that's been going on with the sports organizations, do you guys think at all there's ever a time when we need to stop having the race conversation? Like, when I look at – I was listening to the John Lewis funeral, and they were talking as if we were still in the 60s. Hell, Don just did it just now. There are no laws on the books, guys. There are no Jim Crow laws. There are no laws for segregation. There are no laws that that can publicly discriminate against people in housing and banking. There are no laws to be changed that would end race and discrimination. And yet we still keep listening to these race pimps talk as if we need them because there's so many issues, so many problems going on in America, when in fact there aren't really any except for personal beliefs, and that's something that we'll never be able to change. So I think if we're going to save this country, it's really time for us to just get over whatever it is, and why do we feel we need other people to like us, or we need to eradicate racism in order for us to be a successful people. That quote that Michael talks about, Harriet Tubman and the slaves, she could have freed 1,000 more. Well, I look at it the same way with Democrats. The worst cities that we have in terms of poverty, crime, drugs, education, and black communities, murder, all of that stuff happened in Democratic cities under Democratic rule, and we've been voting for Democrats for 50 years because they keep telling us we can't make it in this country. It's time to let it go. It's time for us to move forward. It's time for us to be assertive. It's time for us to stop talking about how somebody wants to keep us back or keep us down, because really, we're our worst enemy. And if we keep letting these people tell us that they need us, that we need them in order for us to be successful, we'll never go anywhere. It'll just keep deteriorating, as it's been doing for the last 50 years.
Well, I tell you what, when George Floyd incidents don't exist anymore, I will probably agree with you. But as long
that's
as I'm seeing black men get killed.
You
know, anyway,
Michael,
I let you talk,
sorry.
Please. Allow me
to
finish,
off,
please.
That's not an institutional,
until
the, it's not
until
an institutional
prisons
thing.
Prisons in America aren't populated with African-American male bodies. Okay, until the school systems in my community are equal to the school systems in the white community, then maybe I'll agree with you. But until you take care of that, call me later.
Michael, that's not an institutional thing. That's a personal thing. That's not a police department saying, let's go out and kill black people. That was a personal thing. And the schools that you're talking about in those neighborhoods is my point exactly. Those people have been voting Democrat for 50 years, and the schools are getting worse. The crimes are getting worse. Black people are committing more crimes at a higher rate.
That's called systemic racism, brother.
So Democrats are committing systemic racism. Is that what you're telling me? Because these are happening in black-run Democratic communities.
You said it. The systemic racism that's happening in the police department. You know this, there. Come on, man. You know that.
I don't agree with that.
Excuse me.
We're at the end. We're only 30 seconds out. And I wanted to thank everybody for listening. I'm sorry that one of our panelists couldn't get his mic on. People were coming in and out, but it's been a good show. We will be back again next week to continue. You guys have a great week.
Thank you.
right.
Hey, guys, have a great week. Hey, I really appreciate talking to you guys so much, man. Thank y'all so much.
Stay safe. Stay safe.
Yeah.
Stay safe.
Absolutely.
Stay safe.